The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to another week of Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission, your mind. It's a business show, and of course, used to be kind of a non-for-profit kind of show because that's what he's been doing his entire life. He's a giver. He's a serviceman. He's a God soldier is what he is, and I'll say it. I know you won't say it for yourself. Michael Coleman, CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank, also, of course, was the CEO of the Jimmy Hale Mission. He's done a wonderful job. He started some non-for-profits for himself, and we talked some business. You and I were speaking briefly before we came on the air. We try to be topical, and I said, you know, whether you like it or not, with the SNAP program and everything going on, you are getting a lot of publicity right now, and that's always a good thing. People are privy to a lot more information now than they've ever had. They're finding out who their neighbors are and what kind of money their neighbors have because they're now in lines at food banks. So I want to start right there, just kind of give us an overview of where you're at, how you're doing, are people stepping up? Because every time I turn the radio on, it's all about people trying to dig into their pockets and help out. I know the state of Alabama has given several million dollars out of an emergency fund to help out, but how are things going for you, my friend?
It's incredibly busy. You know, of course, we cover, with the help of our four affiliated food banks, we have, you know, over half the state. The need is great. There's a lot of fear, a lot of concern amongst people who about, you know, when are they going to get any benefits? And I totally get that. We're serving some different populations in this than normal. Lots of times, you know, we serve the SNAP population, but half of the people who are food insecure in our state, and it's pretty similar across the country, are above the SNAP line. So they don't get any government assistance. And that's our normal population, working people who are trying to, you know, these are not people just staying at home because they don't want to work. These people are working, just can't make ends meet or have a bill that comes up, you know, that like a car repair that, you know, and there's no resources other than to pay what you would otherwise go for food, those kind of things. So those are the people we tend to help. And then we, out of that portion, you know, there's families with children, there's seniors, there's vets, there's just on and on and on. But right now, during this shutdown, we've had to stand up a pantry on Maxwell Air Force Base. We already serve some military families with our Heroes Harvest program, but Maxwell Air Force Base, we have federal civilian workers who haven't been paid now in 6 weeks. And along with military contractors. And look, everybody's different. Everybody's situation is different. Some people, like, maybe they're retired military. They have that to fall back on. But look, the reality is, whether it's smart or not, most of us live, as we make more money, our lifestyle increases, our budget increases, on and on and on.
Yeah.
And so you could say, wow, you're making $100,000. And you're like, yeah, but... You know, and when you take that away and my spouse makes 50 somewhere, yeah, I get it. We're a household income of 150,000, but now we're down to 50. And most people wouldn't be able to make that adjustment for very long. Yeah. So we have some new populations that we're trying to address and just trying to make sure nobody falls through the crack. I said it last week. I keep saying it. We are not equipped. There's not enough resources in the system to replace SNAP. If you think about it, SNAP benefits for the nation is $9 billion every month.
Wow. That's we incredible.
We can't stand in that gap. But we can't stand in the gap and replace it. All we do is stand in the gap and say, here's what we have, here's what we can do, and let's make sure we distribute our food as equitably as possible.
I, you know, I certainly understand where people outside our country are looking at us right now. I've actually got an aunt that lives in England, and she's like, "What the hell's wrong with you guys?" And I was like, I don't know. I had Sheila Smoot on, who's a politician, former politician. She was on our television show, and I said, I have to ask you, what the hell are we doing? We're the richest country in the world, and we don't have we got more food than even when SNAP's working. We got more food to feed everyone two or three times over. We can't figure this out, and here we are squabbling because we can't figure out what we want to do with our health care. And it's just It's demoralizing. It beats your brains in. It's what happens when we have freedom, because we have the free will to do whatever we want. We have to figure this out. And we're relatively an incredibly young country. You brought something interesting, though. And obviously the New York voters have loud and clear said, listen, we want more help. We want more sub. We want people. We want the government to help us out more. I remember when I got a check from the government during COVID, it was for like $5,600. I don't know where it came from. It had Donald's name on it. I don't know why I got it. But I remember getting it. I remember I had to give it to my ex because we were going through a divorce at the time. And I was like, thank you. I mean, I've never been on any work type of situation where I've asked the state to pay me or anything else, because I felt like you just got to figure it out. I certainly understand that it's there for a reason. And I understand that if you need it, then you should go get it. And that's what it's there for. But yeah, I was like, thank you, United States of America. If you're giving me $5,600, everyone else is getting their money. And that's a lot of money. Can you talk a little bit about, from, and this is very broad, but from a biblical standpoint, from a socialism standpoint, you know, when's the right time to give? How often should we give? What makes capitalism so wonderful? And quite frankly, and you've brought this up, when it's time to play tough love with somebody.
Yeah, so that's a whole bunch to chop off, but I'll tell you. I do think one of the things that you see when God forms the nation of Israel in the Old Testament, he instills in them, he understands that mankind is fallen in terms of we are inheriting this sinful nature, which in essence, I look at it as, if left to our own devices, we're going to live as if we are our own God. We're going to serve self. And everything comes out of that: selfishness, hatred, envy, all the other kind of things. And one of the things he began instituting in Jewish law was the idea of caring for others. One example would be when a farmer would glean the field, he was not allowed to go over it a second time. It was to leave that for the poor. So here's people on your land. Mm-hmm. And they were to go through, and they're working for it. You know, they're getting it, but you're making it available for them. And it was an act of compassion. It was the idea of if a stranger comes, or traveler, you know, that is, be hospitable, give your time, give away resources. And that was built into the culture. And of course, through the last 2,000 years of Christianity, you look in scripture, you know, Jesus said, you sum up all the law and the prophets, everything that's ever been taught by God, you sum it up in two commands: love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and then love your neighbor as yourself. Well, loving neighbor as yourself means elevating their interest above your own, which means if there's a need, you do what you can to address that need, if you're equipped. Paul also wrote, hey, make sure you have enough left over to share with others. So it's a biblical principle, but only as believers, you know, God transforms our hearts and our minds. And, you know, the Paul talks about how he is making us into his image. And that's kind of the journey of faith, where as time goes on, we become more and more understanding we have a God, we serve this God, and we serve the interests of this God, which is the blessing of other people. And so we live. And so a lot of generosity starts it with that mindset of we've been little kids in churches, and your parents give you a quarter, you put it in the collection plate. You don't have it of your own, but you're doing it. And it's just beginning to instill in that the idea of giving. What does that go for? Mm-hmm. Oh, they give it to people for whatever reason. It was amazing to me to not only see what happened in New York, but to hear, of course, been hearing it for months that it was coming, but to listen to some of the responses, particularly from people in their 20s and 30s who were not even alive when the Soviet Union still existed. I'm going to give you one illustration, and it just blew my mind. And it blows my mind that every 20 or 30 years, we have to relive this, where socialism comes back up. And that it's the boy, if just like Mondami says, we need to, government needs to seize the production. I mean, that's the heart of communism. And they paint this utopia of, oh, you know what? Instead of all these rich people, we will make sure that everybody's treated the same, gets the same amount of stuff. Well, we know throughout history that what ends up happening is when you remove merit, when you remove individualism, when you remove incentives to achieve, which market forces play on us in a capitalistic society, then we've seen time and time again what the deal is. You could look currently right now at Venezuela, at the overwhelming poverty since that dictator took over, because here's the thing. People choose the idea of socialism, but when it starts going and government is forcing all your decisions and you've lost all free will to do because you have to do what the government says, then it's the people in the government who have the power and the control and the
Yeah,
money because.
and by the way, when you talk about socialism, that has nothing to do with the higher ups. They're on their own little thing. That's the other part
Oh, yeah.
that just bugs the bejeebers. I mean, continue.
Well, yeah. So. There were pictures back in the day of the Soviet Union of Russians standing in line just to get bread. The shelves on the grocery store were empty. There's been several, they're talking about doing community markets. Well, everywhere that's been tried has failed, where you have, because again, when you remove market forces and competition, and so on and so on, then you end up having, I'll illustrate it with the housing thing. He says, okay, I'm gonna take X amount of properties that are, there's a certain percentage that is rent controlled. And we say, oh yeah, the rent's controlled. That's great. Okay, well, let's talk about that for a second. So people come in. Let's say rent controls $1,000 a month, whatever it is. Well, let's say I own that building, but I'm not allowed to charge market prices because the government won't let me. All right, now, so I have to charge below market. Well, guess what that means? I don't have the excess money to maintain the building and to make improvements in the building. So it turns into a rat hole over time. And then the complaints start happening, and there's no market forces. If it was market forces, what would end up happening is that yes, the rents would be higher, but people would come in with new construction and new opportunities because if they're anywhere there's demand, if you turn loose the market, people are going to fill that demand. So think about a grocery store. It's not that a grocery store doesn't want to come and serve the people and serve them too. But when you have a business climate that's highly taxed, they have minimum wages that are, you're paying for unskilled labor, but you may be paying $20 to $25 for unskilled labor, heavy regulatory burden, on and on and on, along with soft on crime initiatives and all that kind of stuff, then oftentimes what you'll see is it destroys the business climate. A business says, wait a minute, to stand up a business, I'm going to have to invest millions of dollars and I can bring jobs and I can do all these good paying jobs. But if I can't get a return out of it, then
No,
I'm not going to
nobody's
do it. And
doing that.
so that's what socialism will do. And they'll bring this community market. But the question is, okay, who's going to stock the shelves? Where's the food going to come from? And
And
everywhere this,
what happens when it runs out? Because it's going
yeah,
to.
and what, and that's inevitably what it is. Now, I will give you another good example. So Mondami had said, all of this is going to be paid for by taxing the rich. Okay. The very next day after, so I don't have to be Smiley Mondami anymore because I don't have to be charming because I'm the mayor. And now I can just drop the facade and just come right out and say, well, what he did was is he went right out there and he goes, you know what? We're going to have to, we're building a transition and I'm going to need every one of y'all to jump in and help fund this. So the next day, he's asking for money, not from millionaires and
No,
billionaires,
no, no.
but
No,
from
they're moving. They're moving out west. They're moving to
they're already
Wyoming.
planning.
No, we see that goes down. Yeah.
And so let me address this. One of the things I've seen people, and these are young people, I mean, 20 and 30 year olds. Look, I get it. We all thought we understood what the world is. And when I got my 40s, I realized, number one, what a total goofball I must have sounded like in my 20s, trying to talk authoritatively and have no life experience, never run a business, on and on and on, but you're speaking about economic issues because you got a bachelor's degree from a college, but you've never had to be in the marketplace and even understand how market forces work. And so they tend to say, oh, well, what about the greed? Capitalism, you have greed. And I want to tell them, capitalism is not in and of itself good or bad. What capitalism does is it unleashes an individual's ability to go as far as as their hard work will let them go. Now, do some people start from different places? Yeah, if you're in poverty and have no resources, is it going to be harder for you to be successful? Yes, that's life. And I'm not opposed to incentives to try to get people to excel, and that's what the small business loans are and all that kind of stuff. But they say that as if they, well, you know what, there's a lot of greedy people and they make decisions and all that. And I go, yep, but let me tell you something. Because you change the system and go from free market capitalism over to socialism, human greed doesn't go away.
No.
Human greed still exists. So what they do is the greedy in that system are your power brokers who create, they remove the middle class. So you've only got a poverty class that's depending on the power brokers, but it's the power brokers, and you see it. The olig, you know, they people are doing this campaign against Trump about oligarchs, no kings, no oligarchs, because there were these, when it came, you had people in Russia that were billionaires. Why? Because they were truly stealing all the wealth. They weren't growing the pie for everybody. See, in America, if somebody owns, like Trump, if he owns, let's just say he's a real estate magnate, and he goes and buys property and builds Trump Towers or whatever, okay? Well, first of all, he's going to pay a lot of money to all the people who or have to build it. He's going to provide a lot of jobs for people to work there. Now, is he going to get wealthier? Of course, he's going to get wealthier.
Sure.
But everybody else, the pie's increasing. More jobs are created. More opportunities are created. People are going to come in there and learn, and then they're going to be able to go out and launch their own price. That's what the market forces does. Rather than say, nope, you've got the bill, you've still got the hotel owner and socialism. Or which is the government and whoever's over that agency and department who's getting all those funds, and everybody else is having a job, and you can't. Let's say you want to work harder, and you got this scruff beside you. You're making the same amount of money, and
Yep.
he's not worth a
No,
crap.
you're right. That's something. This is Mission Minded, by the way. Keep your mission mind, your mission, your mission, your mind. He's Michael Coleman, CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. We're talking about socialism, talking about the recent vote in New York. I always thought it was interesting whenever I used to work in the bar business a lot doing bar gigs, and I'd always ask before I tipped the waitress, is this going in your pocket or is it going into the pot? And a lot of times they do the pot, and I'm like, I'm not gonna do that then, because when it goes in the pot, you can be as lazy as all get out, and you're making the same money as everyone else, and I don't think that's right. And a lot of places don't do that anymore. And again, with that the capitalistic viewpoint that you just gave, it also gives us an opportunity to be as giving as we possibly want to be. And I think a lot of people,
100%.
this is one of the most giving countries. This is one of the most giving states,
Oh, it's
by
by
far.
far. It's but Birmingham was rated years ago as the second most philanthropic city in the United States. And
Yeah.
I'm not surprised by that at all. And that's what wealth does, not corrupt wealth through socialism, but people, it's a fact, a statistical fact, that in capitalistic societies, more people have been lifted out of poverty because you're giving them the opportunity to use their skills to create wealth.
Yeah.
This is not, it, does generational and family wealth exist as passed on from them?
Sure.
Of course it is. But there are people who are becoming millionaires who go, I have an idea. This is my vision. I'm going to work for it. I'm going to take what talents and abilities, I'm going to work my tail off. I'm going to take risks. I'm going to do whatever it takes. And I'm going to make something happen. And the benefit of that is the payoff for it. Now, I love the idea, had it instilled in me when I was young. The greatest thing about America is you don't have to wait for somebody to give you a job. If you have any gift, or if you're willing to work hard, you can go out and create your own job because you have the freedom of a market force to say, what can I say or do that's of value? And all you have to figure out is how to monetize that. Well, first of all, almost everybody in the world's already monetized. If you have a similar gift, unless you're the only one in America, people have figured out how to monetize. And I'm not talking about in a corrupt way. I'm not talking about a side hustle, like taking advantage of things. I'm saying you can genuinely make your living based on your gifts and abilities. And that freedom, and then you're free to move and live where you want. You're free to take control of your life to make choices. So that's where we start to have problems. Because when you make choices, guess what? Some people make bad
Bad choices,
choices.
yeah.
And when you make bad choices, lots of times you crash and burn. And we hate to see people crash and burn. So what do? Thomas Sowell is a African American, works for the Hoover Institute at Stanford University. He's been a columnist. He's written several books, but he's lived in Markford. He grew up in the projects, but again, African American. And he said this back in the 70s when he used to debate this issue. He's later on in life. He's probably not going to be around much longer, but one of the greatest thinkers of our time. And he was saying that the problem is that we have incentivized failure. And so you fail and you don't want to do anything and you want to just be lazy and you go, yeah, okay, well, here's some food, here's free housing, or here's a housing stuff.
No reason to
So
work. Yeah. There's no reason. Yeah.
you're incentivizing people to do less. Now, the flip side of that is what is really disgusting is somebody says, I don't want to live this life. I want to start doing better. As soon as they get a job, they cut the benefits off. I wish we could say, look, if you don't want to do anything, that's on you. If you want government assistance and don't want to do anything, we'll give you enough that you can survive on.
Yeah.
But again, we have the richest poor. Everybody's walking around with an iPhone 15 or
I
16
know, right? Yeah.
who's on Snaps. All right. I wish they'd say, look, if you're on this much Snap, or this much housing assistance, whatever it is, whatever the benefit is. If you hold a job down for 30 days and get a paycheck, we will bump your benefits 10%. And we're going to do this for 6 months. Now, mind you, by the time the 6 months are over, you're then going to start seeing a decrease in your benefits every month. And maybe after a year, you're done.
Sure.
But by then, you have figured out how to get to work. You figured out how to be successful at work. And along the way, we're giving you more money to further incentivize you to do well. Now, I guarantee you there are people who are like, I'll be damned if I'm going to incentivize somebody to go on a job. Getting a job is the incentive. And I'm a Gen Xer like you. And I'm like, hey, I get it. I do think it's ridiculous if you're just looking philosophically. But if you I'm very pragmatic and like, okay, we have to deal with what is, not what we want it to be. And right now we are incentivizing failure. How do we flip that around and begin to incentivize harder work, more achievement, more productivity? And they have done studies all over the United States, and everyone they've ever done again, because this is very much a socialist idea, is universal income. And so they say you're going to get $1,500 a month regardless of what you do. And they're going to do it for X amount of people. Well, eventually the money runs out and very few lives have changed because people don't save that money. They just increase their standard of chaos. What I would love to do is just even just a small town and say, okay, let's see what you're, if I was a multimillionaire or a billionaire, I'd say, okay, I'm going to go to a small town and everybody wants to sign up for this program. I'm going to take 100 people. And this is what you're currently getting. And I'm going to pour into you each month that you work. And then after a year, I want to go back and look at the results. And
Oh,
I would
man.
hold it up as a shining example of what can be done with government assistance. But you got to then ask yourself, who would possibly be against that? It's the people that would be against it are people who are in power and maintain power by keeping others in poverty.
Sure.
And that's what happens in socialism. Mondani is a 33-year-old person who has never worked a real job. He's a state rep, but he's never run a business. He's never gone to work from 8 to 5, never done that in his life. Yet he's going to run a city like that. And he
But
did it by
you can ride the
convincing
bus,
everybody.
for free.
Yes, yes.
So, I mean,
And
I'm just saying, yeah, we're gonna see how this works out for New York. One of the proudest and most beautiful cities in the entire world. We're happy to have New York.
so when you're incentivized, so you're like, it's going to cost you more if you want to live here. And people are like, and you're softer on crime. You want, instead of sending police, you want to send mental health experts out to crime scenes. Again, it's not a new idea. It's been done. It is a complete failure. And so a rich guy goes, wait a minute, I love living in the city, but it's going to feel less safe to walk on the streets. And by rent controls, you're incentivizing, because right now there are tens of thousands of apartments that are empty. You're going to incentivize people coming in who are lower income, less stable, all of that, where crime is typically going to be higher. Every time it's been tried, it's failed, because what's going to happen is you're going to have higher crime, and then the tourist dollars are going to dry up because nobody's going to want to go to New York and deal with it. All of that was happening, and it wasn't even as bad as this guy, but under David Dinkins, before Mayor Giuliani took over and cleaned up the streets and got tourism going again and built that back up, it was an armpit. New York went through a high crime, drugs on the street, just like we recently saw with homeless in San Francisco. You couldn't walk, defecation all over the sidewalks. People will be like, wait a minute, I'm not going to Broadway. I'd love to go see a Broadway show, or I'd love to go to Times Square and celebrate New Year, but I don't want to have to walk through human feces and waste and people pass out. But that's just going to continue to build, continue to build, continue to build. And it will collapse under the weight of its promises and its unrealized
I
expectations.
had to I laugh. It reminded me of a story. I was out last night at the Galleria with my son, and we go out there every week and we ride elevators and do things together. And there was an older black woman who was with another older black woman, and they were dressed to the nines. They were walking through the Winfrey through the hotel.
Yeah.
And this woman, she probably was in her 70s or 80s. I don't know if she just came out of a coma. I don't know if she's never let out of her house or whatever, but she could not believe she was in Birmingham, Alabama. And she just kept looking around. She goes, "So this is Birmingham, Alabama." And the woman said, "Yeah, this is where I live. This is," she goes, "Well, I'll be," she goes, "I never knew." And she was walking through the mall like she was walking through the Taj Mahal. She just thought, I wanted to stay near her just to feel her gratitude and her gratification of just how miraculous and incredible Birmingham was. Now, obviously, I don't know if she's driven down to other parts of the West End or Ensley or wherever, Hoover, but I mean, just to hear her and just, wow, I cannot believe it was like she's been like in a coma for the last 30 years and just came out. It was really neat to see.
This is another aspect of socialism that I despise is people who are embracing this hate our country.
Yep.
And I'm sitting here going, well, everybody in the world is trying to get here.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's an opportunity to be free, it's better than where they are. And opportunities are here. When tragedy happens around the world, we're pouring in, we always pour in and offer resources to other countries. When tragedy happens on our grounds, we're on our own. We take care of ourselves because, you know, it's on and on and on. And I just wish there's actually some videos starting to come out of people who moved. There's a woman in Costa Rica. she's a white lady, Costa Rica. She said, I just want to tell you, I'm down here in Costa Rica. It's beautiful, but I miss America. I came down here because I had Trump derangement syndrome and I just ran and I moved. I said, I got to get out of this place. And it doesn't have any of the conveniences. It doesn't have any of this.
That wasn't Oprah, was it?
I said, I can't wait to get back. And so until people, and so these 20 and 30 year olds are typically coming from well-to-do families. They haven't had to struggle.
Yeah.
They haven't lived in other countries. They haven't seen the effects of government restrictions, and it goes on and on and on. And so I hate that for New York of what's going to come.
We'll see if it does.
How socialism has been practiced wherever. It's just a matter of how long it's going to take before it collapses.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see if it happens. I don't know if it can happen that quickly without.
It's not going to collapse overnight, obviously. Yeah. But you go back in 3 years. And it'll be a sewage pit.
Yes, it will
be. Walking down the streets. Yeah,
this is Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission on your mind. Next week, I want to continue our talk and talk about what it takes to be a giving individual. Why do people give? Why do we have to have natural disasters? Or why do we have to have bad things happen before we'll reach into our pocket, where tithing comes into these things, and how we can be better stewards of money that, hey, you know what? It ain't ours. It's his. It's not our money. It's his money, and we're just here to spend it. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on Mission Money. Come up here next, Bite by Bite, a show specific to the Heart of Alabama Food Bank as they go through the SNAP program issues. We'll continue to take your emails. info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net. Michael, thank you, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure as always.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.